I should note that both sides have up to 20 minutes for this argument. Ms. Kostantakos, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, good morning. My name is Chris Kostantakos. I am the attorney for the appellants, Damon Halverson and Aaliyah Halverson, who are the biological siblings of Meridian Hazel, who are appearing in this matter by and through their adoptive parents, Jeffrey and Karen Halverson of Minnesota. The most important relationship in a child's life after the relationship with his or her parent is the child's relationship with her brother and sister. Sibling relationships have been held to be unique and important relationships. The time shared between brothers and sisters, whether they be times of joy, times of mischief, or even shared difficulties, often provide the foundation for relationships that can endure a lifetime. Strong bonds that develop between brothers and sisters are in most cases irreplaceable. When siblings grow up together in the same home, it tends to strengthen their familial bonds, extending their shared heritage with grandparents, their sense of history, their family's customs. All of these things were not only established by the evidence in this case, but they represent the findings and conclusions expressed by tribunals across the country, including Nebraska. Meridian's only siblings are her brother Damon and her sister Aaliyah, who met Meridian within 2 weeks after her birth. Meridian knows her brother and sister. All visits between the three children have gone very well. They are developing a relationship with one another. Meridian knows the Halverson family. They have been present at the visits with her. Those interactions have gone well. Meridian knows her grandparents, Mark and Tammy Hazel, who are the appellees in this appeal. And I call the court's attention to exhibit number 83. That is a stipulation of fact signed by all of the parties in this case, agreeing that the grandparents, Mark and Tammy Hazel, have in fact visited this child periodically throughout the juvenile case.
We have stated in several cases that termination of parental rights operates to terminate grandparents' rights. Why wouldn't the same be true of whatever rights a biological sibling may have?
I don't believe that's the case, Your Honor. I know that, I understand that the case you're referring to or cases are Ditter and SNR, but I don't think that the termination of parental rights operates horizontally, so to speak. It does operate vertically through the grandparents, but that would produce, first of all, an absurd result that would mean that every time a parent's rights are terminated, that the three children would not be related to each other any longer. The department would be under no obligation to seek a joint placement of the children. I know it's not the Supreme Court's holding per se in the interest of Sir Messiah T, but in that case, similar argument was raised that the previous siblings were not related to the present children under the court's jurisdiction by reason of the termination of parental rights, and the court in that case came back and said they are, in fact, siblings for purposes of the termination under 282.
And the termination has taken place here. The termination has taken place.
In this case, yes, it has, Your Honor.
Well, we're talking about two terminations, aren't we? The termination of parental rights with respect to the two older children, which occurred some time ago in Minnesota.
Those were relinquishments of parental rights to the appellants.
By both the mother and the father.
That's correct.
But they operate to terminate the parental relationship. And then the mother's rights to Meridian have been terminated as well.
They were terminated on the same date that the court overruled the placement.
So now the issue is, where will Meridian be placed?
Correct, Your Honor.
And can you tell us the names, the ages of the three children?
Meridian is, I believe, 3 and a half. Damon is 7. And Aaliyah is 6 years old.
And they have never resided in the same house.
That's correct, Your Honor. They have not resided in the same household.
Is that a factor in this case?
I don't believe it is, Your Honor.
Why not?
I think that it's set forth in the briefs, but under the case law and the policies of the department as well as the federal law, the foster connections law, The entire thrust and purpose of that is to foster connections between the child and the child's biological family. The law isn't the fostering, maintaining existing connections, but it's fostering connections. And I think there is a fundamental liberty interest that the siblings are claiming in this case to know their sister. This court has announced on several occasions that children, siblings not only have the right, that juvenile courts have to observe the interests of juveniles, but more importantly, I think it was in the LJ case, that siblings have the right to have the opportunity to know one another. And I think that's where maybe some of the sticking point has come about in this case, is that they never lived together.
Is that right to know a sibling synonymous with a right to reside with the sibling?
Your Honor, we are claiming that the right is a fundamental right or a substantial right, depending on the case law and this court's interpretation, but we are claiming that the sibling has the right to acquire a relationship with another sibling, to develop the relationship with the other sibling, and to maintain a relationship with the other sibling, and that would include in a proper case, unless it's against those siblings' best interest, the right to grow up in the same home. They also have the right, an inalienable and inherent right, to visit with one another, and that's been recognized.
Has any court ever held that siblings have a constitutionally protected right to grow up in the same home after parental rights are terminated?
I'm not aware that they have.
So you're blazing new ground.
We are asking you to. Thank you.
With respect to the federal statute that you mentioned, is it codified in 42 United States Code 671?
I believe it is.
Have there been any constitutional issues raised with respect to that statute?
The statute was raised in the amended motion to change placement.
Have other courts addressed,
oh, I'm sorry.
Have other courts addressed the constitutionality?
I don't believe they have, Your Honor. No. The appellants in this case believe that the result in this case defies common sense. It's not supported by the evidence, the totality of the evidence. It's contrary to the public policy favoring the preservation of sibling relationships, as well as the placement of children with relatives where that's possible, and finally works an injustice, a tremendous injustice in the lives of Damon Meridian and Aaliyah. They are respectfully requesting the court to reverse the order of the juvenile court and place their sister Meridian in the Halverson home for adoption in order that Meridian, Damon, and Aaliyah can have the opportunity to grow up together and continue their sibling relationship. This is exactly what the Department of Health and Human Services recommended to the court in June of 2009 before it took a U-turn. The appellants believe that Meridian's best interest is served by placing her with her brother and sister. And it's based on two things, based on just an examination of the evidence. Even if you don't go to the federal law, the policy arguments, just on the best interest evidence, that it is in her best interest to be placed with her brother and sister.
Now, just on the best interest evidence, what deference do we have to give to the juvenile court judge?
I'm sorry?
On the best interest evidence, what deference do we have to give to the juvenile court judge?
Well, this is a trial de novo review, Your Honor, and I know I'm telling you what you already know here, but my belief is that there are problems with some of the findings of the juvenile court judge. The evidence, there is no evidence, at least competent evidence, that Meridian would suffer any type of harm if she were removed from her current foster care placement and placed into the home of the health.
What is the evidence generally with respect to Meridian's experience in the foster?
It is excellent. Her experience in every foster home she's been placed in, she has had positive experiences, her needs have been met, she's been well cared for, she's never been the subject of any type of abuse or serious neglect or any matter such as that. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve my time.
Would you agree that the Halversons, in their own right, have no standing here? The standing, if it exists, would be that of the two children?
The standing would be the two children, but the Halversons do support the two children having a relationship with Meridian. Yes.
Thank you. I'm not sure who intends to be next, and I'm sorry, ma'am, I'm not sure who you are.
Good May it please the court, my name is Karen Nelson. I'm an attorney for Mark and Tammy Hazel, the maternal grandparents and interveners in this case. First, I want to point out Exhibit 83 is a stipulated set of facts that indicate that Mark and Tammy Hazel did have a relationship with this child at Meridian beginning at the age of 2 weeks, and that they continued to have periodic contact with Meridian even throughout the time that she was in foster care. Additionally, it stipulated that Mark and Tammy Hazel had made repeated contacts with Health and Human Services, expressing their desire and opinion that Meridian should be placed with her siblings, Damon and Aaliyah. At the time of the hearing and the change of placement hearing, Tiffany Hazel's parental rights were intact. And in that regard, I think that Mark and Tammy Hazel had standing to participate. I also agree with...
I'm sorry, at the time of the placement hearing, the parental rights were intact?
Yes, they were.
And then subsequently they were.
Correct. And I would also note that at the time of the hearing, because the mother's parental rights were intact, and I think for the reasons set forth in Ms. Costantico's reply brief, it's clear that the rights of the siblings, I think, endure even the termination of parental rights. To hold otherwise, I think a comparable situation would be if parents were to die. It's apt then to say because the child no longer has a legal relationship with the parents because they're deceased, that they no longer have a relationship with each other. I think the court would agree that that's an absurd result. I think it's clear that sibling relationships are unique. It is the one relationship that any of us will have that will last our entire lives. When we're young, our parents are very important and our siblings are important, but typically what happens is that the parents pass away before the kids, and that the siblings are the people that start young, develop the relationship that lasts the whole life of the child.
Are there places in the statute or jurisprudence that recognize a legal relationship between siblings?
I think that those are set forth fairly clearly in Ms. Costantico's reply brief. I also think that I addressed those arguments in terms of a substantive and due process right of families to have a relationship. I think expanding that to include siblings is a natural and logical step.
Did I read in the briefs that the Kearns would make a lot of accommodations for the children to be to visit each other and have some interplay?
I think that there was some testimony that it was their intention to do that. I think there's also testimony that there's nothing legally binding requiring
that
to happen.
Is there anything that could be legally binding ordered by a court or
no,
between the parties?
I don't believe so.
Well, as long as the court had jurisdiction over the child, it could place the child in one place but order visitation of others who are not in that custodial relationship.
Correct.
Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
You're
however,
talking about a post-adoption system.
Correct.
Yeah.
I know of no legal mechanism that would require the Kearns to continue having contact or visitation with Damon and Aaliyah. And I know that initially it was decided that Jeff and Karen Halverson would bring Damon and Aaliyah to Nebraska to have visitation here, and shortly thereafter that the Kearns would then take Meridian to Minnesota. And in fact, that first contact happened, I believe, July or August of 2009, and it wasn't until April of 2010, several months later, almost a year, that the Kearns went to Minnesota, and their time there, I think, was for an afternoon, and they turned around and came back. I don't know what the Kearns' true intentions are, but if you look at their history, I think they've been less than sincere in saying they're going to facilitate the contact.
What do you think is the scope of a court's authority to have an order in the nature of an adoption contract that outlines visitation and so forth?
There's clearly statutory provisions that allow open adoption and open communication contracts between biological parents and adoptive parents. There's no such provision, and I know of no authority under common law or otherwise that would allow for the same.
Is it possible, in your view, in an open adoption, to make provision for visitation?
Not as I read the statute. And unless there's a new interpretation of the statute. Now, I think that I had 5 minutes and I'm showing it 2.5, but I'm at red. Could I reserve the rest for rebuttal? Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And are you Ms. Heather Shaw Risco?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm going to take this water out of the way. The glass, just think this is cold. May it please the court. I am Carla Heather Shaw Risco. I am here today representing the Department of Health and Human Services, and I will be sharing the appellee's argument time with Patrick Campagna and Sandra Markley in this matter.
So how many minutes are you going to take?
I am going to try to take about 10 minutes, but we'll see. I'm going to start by addressing the issue of sibling placement. The appellants have made arguments that the department's failure to place Meridian with her siblings was a violation of state and federal statutes as well as the department's own policies. The department recommends that Meridian remain placed with her family, her current family, and that the Kearns be allowed to pursue adoption. We acknowledge that there are state statutes that reference the placement of children, state wards with their family members as well as with siblings, and federal law, the Fostering Connections Act, that also makes a reference to the placement of siblings together when they've been removed from their home.
Does the department receive, does the state of Nebraska receive funds for which those sorts of undertakings under the federal statute are required?
Yes, Your Honor. That is, in order for the department to continue to receive those funds, we must be in compliance with the federal requirements. However, our position is that both the state statute and the federal statute don't mandate placement of siblings together.
Well, assuming you're correct, what is your argument on the best interest that this child should be with the siblings?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's exactly what I was going to get to. When we're making these decisions and deciding whether we have to place siblings together, it's not just this particular statute or policy. We also have to look at other requirements and other policies that we have. And the main policy and the main statutory requirement that the department has to follow when making placement decisions is the best interest of the child.
Is that true under the federal statute as well as under
That is true under both the state and the federal statute as well. It says that the paramount concern is the health and safety of the child. And we would propose that when they talk about the health of the child, it doesn't just mean physical health, it also means the emotional and the well-being health of the child. And that's, I think, the primary concern in this case.
But do you start off with a quasi-presumption that it should be with the child should be with her siblings?
Margaret Bitts, who is the policy expert, has been with the department for 20 years. She testified about the department's policy, and she testified that the department's policy assumes that there's been a sibling relationship that was pre-existing. And so I think in a lot of cases, when we're dealing with this issue of sibling placement, that's what we have. We have siblings who were in the same home. Possibly, if we haven't had termination of parental rights, we've got siblings who were expecting to go home to the same home. There's a relationship there. Keeping them together, the policies and the statutory intentions of keeping siblings together is because it's clear that the siblings, there's going to be continuity for them. There's going to be familiarity if they're with the siblings that they know and that they care for and that they feel like they're looking out for each other.
And that's the testimony from somebody at HHS?
Well, Margaret Bitts' testimony was that the department's policy on placing siblings together is intended for situations in which there was a pre-existing relationship.
And what is the federal statutory policy?
There really isn't a lot of guidance on what the federal statutory policy is.
Well, I'm looking at the statute. It says to place siblings removed from their home in the same foster care, guardianship, adoptive placement, et cetera, unless the state documents that such a joint placement would be contrary to the safety or well-being of the siblings. Isn't that the policy?
That's the policy. The intent. There's not a lot of guidance on what the intent of this statute, of this act is. It's that it states earlier in the act that it's to provide continuity for the children. And so I think we need to look at it in that light, that we want to provide continuity for these children. Going back to the best interest of the child, I think it's clear. I mean, at the beginning of this case, we have a mom who wants to reunify, and that's another one of this a statutory requirement on both state level and federal level, as well as department policy, is that our primary goal is going to be reunification of the child and returning the child to the child's home. In this case, the child's home was with her mother here in Nebraska. Meridian's home was never with her siblings. They had been adopted 2.5 years before Meridian was even born. So there had never been any connection. The home that we are going to, that the reunification goal is to return Meridian to, is not a home with the siblings, it's a home with the mom. Mom is in Nebraska. Siblings are more than 7 hours away. So when this case starts, and we have to look at what's the best interest of the child and what's the goal in the case, both of those statutory requirements basically require us to keep Meridian here in Nebraska, local, where she can have contact with her mom on a regular basis. Is it in the best interest of a child who, at the time of removal, was 3 months old, as the case progresses, a 6-month-old, a year-old, an 18-month-old, that she has to make a 14-hour round-trip car travel every time she needs to visit with her mom when the goal is reunification with mom? Based on that fact alone, placing Meridian with the siblings at the beginning of this case just wasn't feasible.
Well, what about now?
I think it's important that we note what evidence there was on the best interest. When it became clear that reunification probably was not going to be successful, we start looking at, okay, what is going to be in Meridian's best interest? We revisit.
And how old was Meridian at that time?
She was 18 months
or so?
Just shy of her second birthday. She was, okay.
18. How long had she been with the foster parents?
At that time, which would have been about March of 2009, she'd been with foster parents for just about a year. She'd been with the Kearns for about a year. She'd been out of home placement.
How many foster homes has the child been in?
Foster homes. She, when the accident initially happened, she was returned. The police returned her to an aunt. That was not really a department foster home. The aunt had said, "I can't keep the child." She went into a foster home where she stayed for, I believe, about five or six months. And then they had issues and needed to have her removed from their home. She went into a respite home where she was for, I think, about 5 days. Then she went with the Kearns. Then she went back with her mom, was with her mom for about 5 weeks, and then she went back to the Kearns.
When did she go back with the Kearns?
She went back with the Kearns in May of 2009.
And how old was she at that time?
She was just about 2 years old.
And how old was she?
I believe she was just
How old would she be now?
I'm sorry, I have to correct my date. She went back to the Kearns in 2008. She was just about 1 year old at that time. Today, her birthday is in June. She'll be 4 years old in June of this year. So at this point in time, she has been with the Kearns for roughly 3 years of her life. She was bounced into foster homes prior to being with them, but she's been with them nearly 3 years of her 4 year old life. So let's look at the best interest and what evidence we have of the best interest. The report from Dr. Cottom, that's our starting point, that's the first report that we get. What does Dr. Cottom say about the best interest? What Dr. Cottom's report says, and this is Exhibit 15 at page 26, taking the child from her foster parents' home might not be in the child's best interest. That's a reference, that's Dr. Cottom's only reference to best interest. She does not say that it would be in Meridian's best interest to be placed with her siblings. Rather, what she says is...
Well, but she says it might not be.
What she says is that taking the child from her foster parents' home, from the Kearns' home...
Might not be.
Might not be in her best interest.
And who is Dr. Cottom testifying on behalf of?
Well, Dr. Cottom, at the placement hearing, she was testifying on behalf of the appellants. She was hired at the court's direction to the Department of Health and Human Services to obtain an evaluation. So the department initially hired Dr. Potter to perform this evaluation. She performed the evaluation, I believe it was in May of 2009, did not meet with did not observe Meridian with the Halversons, did not even meet Damon and Aaliyah, did observe Meridian with the Kearns, and said, very clear, well-bonded, they take very good care of this child. That's clear. She says, it's going to be, this child's going to be lucky wherever she goes, because both of these families are going to do a good job. What she says as far as placing the siblings is that she believes that Meridian should grow up with the opportunity to have a close and loving relationship with her biological siblings. She doesn't even say that she should be placed with the siblings.
But is that possible in any context other than placement?
Well, I think what about situations where we have parents who have been divorced and one child lives with one parent, one child lives with the other parent. They're able to develop a relationship.
Well, but there a court can order visitation for the non-custodial parent. But if things move forward and this child is adopted by her current foster parents, is there any legally enforceable way to maintain a relationship with the siblings in Minnesota?
I do not believe that there's any legally enforceable way for the siblings to have it. There are a couple of other ways. One is that was discussed earlier, the open adoption, there could be a contact and communication agreement with mom, and mom could then provide for visitation with Damon and Aaliyah.
But mom's out of the picture here.
Mom, her rights are terminated. Right, that's correct. Her rights are terminated at this point.
Okay, could you sum up with me just briefly why it wouldn't be in the best interest to have the child with the siblings in Minnesota? What was the evidence?
The evidence was that it would be disruptive to her to be removed. That was Dr. Cotton's report, was it might not be in her best interest to be removed because she is bonded to this family. There was evidence that when Meridian came back, she had been placed with the Kearns for a while. She leaves and she goes with mom. She comes back to the Kearns. And that's the last time that was the last placement change that she had had. And at that point, the Kearns say, we notice a huge difference in this child. She's having a much more difficult time readjusting to us. She's clingy. She's not sleeping well. We're having difficulties with her. And it was clearly noticed once she returned on this last placement change.
So she is naturally bonded with the Kearns.
She is naturally bonded with the Kearns.
What else?
She's been there. She's bonded not only with the Kearns' mom and dad, but also with their extended family.
But aren't all these factors going to be present in any time in these juvenile proceedings because of how they play out, the length of time?
Not necessarily. I mean, ideally, we're not going to have children who are in a foster situation for as long as this case has been going on. So it's not always going to be the situation. A lot of times, there's been, the parent has been working on reunification, has been having the visitation and stuff. I think perhaps one of the things that is maybe the most telling is that there was no evidence that it would be in Meridian's best interest to go with her siblings. The evidence that was presented was that it's in Meridian's best interest to remain with the Kearns, where she's bonded, where she's comfortable, where we know that there's not going to be any detrimental effect to her. Everyone agreed that there would be a detrimental effect to her if she had to be removed from the Kearns.
Was there evidence that it would be in her best interest to be with her siblings?
There was not any evidence. There was not any evidence other than the argument, well, we've got statutes that say that she should be placed with her siblings. We want her.
I thought the doctor testified that it would be in her best interest to have a close, loving relationship with her siblings.
Close, loving relationship.
Well,
and Dr. Cotton also, I think it's really important that she said, this is not peer-reviewed, this is my opinion that siblings should be together. Not peer-reviewed, no scientific evidence. It's my opinion.
That's federal policy, isn't it?
Well, there's a federal policy,
Departmental policy.
What we have to look at, and the department's policy is based on the idea that the siblings should have a relationship, have an existing relationship, and we want to continue that existing relationship. One thing, and I want to make sure that I let Ms. Duncan in.
If I could, is this fair to say that with respect to the federal policy that, let's say, encourages a sibling placement or something to that effect, Is it not understood that the child may have existing attachments that will be disrupted, but nevertheless, sibling placement should be, whatever, encouraged and so forth? In other words, is there not an understanding there will be a transition with respect to body and attachment?
Your Honor, respectfully, I don't believe that that is the understanding. I think there is not guidance on...
But isn't the underlying set of facts, shall I say, almost universally that in the circumstance that the child is not with the siblings?
I'm not sure I'm understanding your question.
I beg to differ with you that there's not guidance. I think the federal statute says unless the state documents that a joint placement would be contrary to the safety or well-being. I think the burden is on the state to show.
Right.
To the contrary.
Yes, which the department did do. I mean, we documented it. Exhibit 23.
And that's what we're asking. Okay.
Right. Exhibit 23 is the court's, the department's court report that documents the decision to place with the siblings, that a placement with the siblings would not be in the best interest. And so, I mean, that's exhibit number 23 is where the department has documented why we don't think it's in the best interest.
That it would be contrary, in that document, it would be contrary to the safety and well-being of
Meridian for her to be removed from her placement and gone to siblings. The last thing I would like to ask the court is that you take a look at pages 853 and 854 of the Bill of Exceptions.
Pages what?
853 and 854 of the Bill of Exceptions. It's Karen Halverson's testimony. I think it's a little disingenuous for the appellants to come in and to argue that it is in Meridian's best interest that she be placed with her siblings and that the sibling relationship is so important. The Halversons also have a third adopted child, a child who is roughly Meridian's age, just slightly older than Meridian, not biologically related to Damon and Aaliyah or to Meridian. This child, his name is Isaac, and he has two biological siblings of his own. A half-sibling and a full biological sibling. He has had contact with his half-brother one time, and this was at the request of the brother's family, and Mrs. Halverson testified that they prefer not to have their son Isaac around his brother. Isaac also has a full biological sister. The Halversons know where she's placed. She's placed approximately an hour or so away, hour and a half away from where the Halversons live. Yet he has never had contact with his full biological sibling, sister. The Halversons testified that they have never made any effort to have any contact with their adopted child's biological sibling. I think it's pretty clear here that they don't put that much of an emphasis on this need for a biological relationship. I think we have to let their actions speak louder than their words in this case. And with that, I am going to rest and allow Mr. Campagna and Ms. Markley to come up and argue.
How much time is left?
3 minutes, 27 seconds.
Okay. How much time are you going to take, Mr. Campagna?
I'll take 2 minutes, Your Honor.
2 minutes is what you get.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please, the court. I represent Mr. and Mrs. Kearns, and I would address the issue of best interest quickly. When this child came back from her 33-day stay with her mother, the foster parents, the Kearns, indicated that the child couldn't sleep at night unless they held her hands for not just 5 minutes or 15 minutes, but several hours. That went on for many, many months. In fact, it just subsided relatively close to the date of the trial in this case. The commitment that the foster parents showed to this child was extraordinary. That Mr. Halverson indicated in his trial testimony, he understood doing what he's proposing to do would be a grief experience like death for this child, because she knows only my clients as her mother and her father. She calls them mom. Mrs. Halverson changed her tune a little bit, but she indicated she had prior experience running an in-home daycare. She indicated this would be something similar to changing from one daycare to another. Those are the little nuances in the testimony that Judge Porter gave great attention to over 5 days of trial, and indicated on her issue of best interest that one certainty she knew that if this child was removed, that could cause harm to this child. With respect to the fundamental interest, there is no fundamental liberty interest to be placed with a sibling. I don't know of any case law, any decision that would indicate as such. If we go down that road and blaze that trail, what we're talking about here is allowing siblings to say, I want custody of my sibling. Take that to its natural circumstance in a divorce proceeding where we have an adult sibling saying, I want custody over my father or my mother.
How does the federal statute work in all of this? Are there certain presumptions or burdens shifting?
I think the presumption is right there, Judge, that the siblings should be placed together. Why wouldn't we do that? But the best interest, as Margaret Bitz testified, best interest trumps all. And Judge Porter heard plenty of best interest issues in 5 days of trial. And with respect to abuse of discretion, I don't know what the abuse of discretion is. If there is a fundamental liberty interest and there's a due process right that wasn't, what was the due process violation? The interveners, the Halversons, acting on behalf of half or full siblings, we don't know, had their day in court, had 5 days in court. And so I'm not sure certain what due process rights were looking at. I'll reserve the rest of the time for Ms. Markley.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
How much time do we have for Ms. Markley?
55 seconds.
You've got 55 seconds.
My name is Sandra Markley, and I'm the Deputy County Attorney that filed this case in September of 2007, 1 year prior to the enactment of the Fostering Connections Act, so that wasn't even in place at that time. Meridian Hazel was an only child when I filed this case. Her siblings had been adopted 3 years prior. She was an only child, and we had to keep her in the state of Nebraska because we had to reunify under the law with her mother.
I don't think anybody's taking issue or criticizing the time frame and what the adjudications and things like that.
The guardian ad litem and I both support the court's decision in this case. What I would like to address is jurisdiction. The plain language of the statute says that do not include interveners. So there is no jurisdiction for the interveners to appeal. Even if we would expand the language of those entitled to appeal to include interveners, they have no standing because there is no substantial liberty interest in controlling the life of your sibling. And to do so, as Mr. Capania pointed out, would open up an entire can of worms that would not be helpful or useful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And do we have time for rebuttal?
We do. 6 minutes.
6 minutes and 26 seconds.
Yeah. I'd like to address several points, if I may. First of all, what is the evidence, one of the justices asked, favoring that placement with Meridian is in her best interest, and the department's counsel told you there was none. Here is our version of it. The facts in this case show that Meridian is a resilient and healthy child who is developmentally on track. The evidence is undisputed. Every single court report about this child reported, and the case manager testified to this and agreed she adjusts easily to new surroundings. Her basic needs have been met in each of her foster placements. She's adjusted to each foster home in which HHS has placed her. She has no documented psychiatric or psychological problems, nor has she been maltreated or abused. She knows her brother and sister. They have a positive relationship. All reports of the visits indicate that the visits are going well and that they're developing a positive relationship. The Halversons are experienced parents who adopted Damon and Aaliyah and also successfully raised children of their own. They're licensed foster parents by the state of Minnesota. The home studies that the department waited around for a year before they requested came back from Minnesota, highly recommended the Halversons for placement of Meridian. The Halversons' training has included training in issues of children's mental health, discipline, autism. They are familiar with the social services and mental health communities in the area where they live. They're reputable persons and highly regarded in their community. They initiated contact at the very front end of this case, Your Honors, in order for the specific reason of trying to explore.
Counsel, do you want to address for a moment the Bill of Exceptions, page 853 and 854, which we haven't had an opportunity to look at yet, about the relationship or Halverson's relationship with the other adopted child, the siblings?
There are concerns with the other adopted child. They do have another adopted child. There are concerns with visitation. They had to do with, my understanding, was allegations of sexual abuse.
Okay.
And that is the reason why the Halversons did not want to.
They did not want one sibling around.
That's
another.
Correct.
Okay.
The additional evidence favoring placement of Meridian with her siblings, the Halversons have traveled several times to Nebraska. They've initiated the requests for all of the visits. They've been highly recommended by Dr. Cottom for placement. And I think this is important. They understand that if Meridian is placed in their home, yes, there may be some adjustment issues adjusting to the new home. The evidence is undisputed that they have made arrangements with a child psychologist in Minnesota with expertise in bonding and attachment issues if such issues arose and if such help is needed. The Halversons can provide a very good home that basically would offer her the opportunity to have a relationship, continue a lifelong relationship with her brother and sister.
Could you address the standing issue, please?
Under that statute, the 43-2-106 statute, I think that statute does not contemplate interveners.
Well, we know that they don't fit within the statute.
Yes.
The children do not. So then the next question would be, assuming that there's a common law standing applicable outside the statute, what would be the stake or the interest of the siblings and the outcome of this controversy?
Well,
the legal stake.
You're not talking about the 43-2-106 statute. You're talking about substantial right.
Right.
The claim of the interveners, the appellants, was, well, let me back up. By allowing them intervention as legal parties into the juvenile court proceeding, the juvenile court agreed with their complaint to intervene and found that they had a legal interest in the relationship with Meridian sufficient to warrant their intervention into the case. And they intervened in the case for three purposes, basically: notice, opportunity to be heard; number two, to raise any issue before the court regarding their sister's health, safety, and welfare; and number three, to express their interest in possible placement, visitation, and permanency with their sister. Given, I believe, that the juvenile court determined those things and constituted them as interveners in the case and made those, and through its order of intervention, agreed with those findings, I think that their claim is diminished by the current order of the juvenile court overruling their motion for change of placement, and it's diminished by all of the reasons I think that we've heard about this morning, that if the current foster parents adopt Meridian, there is no enforceable mechanism by which Damon, Aaliyah, and Meridian can continue their sibling relationship. The adoptive foster parents will simply become the gatekeepers of all contact between Meridian, Damon, and Aaliyah.
The Halversons are not parties, is that correct?
That's correct. They are the, under 25307, Your Honor.
Well, they're on behalf of the, a big one.
Appeared as next friends.
Yes.
Okay, so are they appearing as next friends? Are they subject to the court's authority?
Yes.
To be ordered,
yes,
with respect to this
matter?
I believe
they are, Your Honor, yes.
Well, that would be true with respect to a placement before adoption, but probably not after adoption.
After adoption, the juvenile court would lose all jurisdiction over everyone. The other point I would like to bring up, in addition to the, let me back up. Even in her testimony, the guardian ad litem testified that Meridian's need to have a relationship with her siblings is paramount. The recommendation for placement she made was conditional, and she explained that it was conditional, meaning if Meridian could not continue to have this relationship with her brother and sister consistently over the next 16 years of her life, she would not be making this recommendation. Dr. Cottom, the department's lawyer, asked you to look at page 26 of Exhibit 15. I would ask you, we focused on this one sentence, it might not be in her best interest. We've done that to the exclusion of all of the other paragraphs. When Dr. Cottom, and all the other paragraphs do talk about best interest. When Dr. Cottom wrote that report, that one little sentence in there became a cause for alarm, and yet no one talked to Dr. Cottom to ask her what she meant. At the trial, she very clearly explained, look, I was just trying to say I did take into account all the possible consequences. This child might have some attachment issues if she is placed in the new home. Regarding the last point on, with the judges, please look at Exhibit 91. That is the department's own document implementing the Fostering Connections Act. There is no language in there that requires siblings to have a previously existing relationship. Margaret Fitz testified that there is no language either in the Federal Act or the department's policy requiring a previously existing relationship. And in fact, she said that the department has, can, and continues to place children or with other siblings with whom they've never resided or never had a relationship. They're not barred from doing it. Exhibit 23, which is the HHS court report, that report, are we out?
I think your time is up, Ms. Kosky.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I saw the timer was still going.
And I think that exhausts everyone's time this morning.
Probably exhausted the court, too. Thank you.
I greatly appreciate it. Court is adjourned.